We have heard some disturbing information over the last few weeks on this program concerning this aspect. Now, again, Jacques Vallée comes to mind. Jacques Vallée is a highly respected author, astrophysicist, and astronomer. In Jacques' book, Messengers of Deception, he sums up a good point very well, and I quote, "I believe there is a machinery of mass manipulation behind the UFO phenomena. It aims at social and political goals by diverting attention from some human problems and by providing a potential release for tensions caused by others. The contactees are part of that machinery. They are helping to create a new form of belief. Are the manipulators, in the final analysis, nothing more than a group of humans who have mastered a very advanced form of power? UFOs are real. They are an application of psychotronic technology, that is, they are physical devices used to affect human consciousness. They may not be from outer space. They may, in fact, be terrestrial-based manipulating devices. Their purpose may be to achieve social changes on this planet. Their methods are those of deception, systematic manipulation of witnesses and contactees, covert use of various sects and cults, control of the channels through which the alleged space messages can make an impact on the public," end quote. Could this be what the government knows and has been so intent on concealing from the public? Well, as we know, only time will tell. My guest now tonight, I want to introduce my guest tonight. He is a past member of the Air Force Press Desk. He was also involved with Project Blue Book, the Air Force's official UFO investigation project to identify UFOs. He was also the first official spokesman for the Air Force concerning this subject. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Al Chopp. Good evening, Al.
Good evening.
How are you? And thank you for being on the program.
Oh, I'm fine. And looking forward to talking to you.
Good. We're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, we're going to get into the discussion about what happened in 1952 that started a lot of stuff that interested the country at the time. In the meantime, we invite anyone who's been in the military or who knows radar and who's had some experience with UFOs to give us a call tonight and share your story with us and my guest, Al Chopp. My guest, Al Chopp, and I'm very pleased to have Al on the program in this program Blast from the Past tonight. And once again, we invite anyone who's been in the military or who knows radar and who's had some experience with UFOs to give us a call tonight at 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. We want to hear your story. Share it with my guest, Al Chopp. Now, Al, real quick, a little bit of your background before we launch into the 1952 sightings. You were the press officer or the press spokesperson for the Pentagon, correct?
Well, yes, at that time, but going back before that, I was the press chief at Headquarters Air Materiel Command at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and that's where the Air Technical Intelligence Center, which had the problem of UFOs in its lap, was physically located. And because people were seeing all these things in the sky, naturally they would call the Air Technical Intelligence Center, Wright-Patterson, asked for the press chief, and that was me.
Okay. Now, I would imagine, from what I've understood from a lot of the reading that I've done with Edward Ruppelt and Donald Kehoe, you were quite a busy man back in those times.
Well, it got real hectic at times.
Okay.
Normally, it was, just an everyday occurrence.
I guess the thing I would like to know about, before we go into the 1952 thing, there seemed to be a lot of concern, according to Ed Ruppelt, who was the captain Air Force in the Air Force, and he was the head of Project Blue Book. There was a lot of sharp division between what he called the pro believers in interplanetary phenomena and the ones that did not believe in that. What kind of scuttlebutt did you hear in your travels?
Well, you'd have to remember that the Air Force and the Navy, and practically all our armed forces, are made up of ordinary people like you and me.
Right.
We have diverse opinions, and in any large group as that, you're going to have pro and con. And the military people are no different. So there were many who had many opinions on UFOs, whether they were real or not real, whether they were a figment of the imagination or a phenomenon or real outer space vehicles.
What do you think evidence at that time showed? Was there any really solid evidence aside from really credible reports by military pilots that the phenomena was real?
Well, you had electronic surveillance, of course, by radar. And you did have visual sightings by military people in coordination with the radar. In other words, the radar is picking up the object, and the airborne pilot has radar on his in his airplane, and he is also making contact with the unknown object. So you have a two-way radar fix. So but that's pretty, you know, that's pretty good evidence that there's something there.
Okay, well, I agree. I understand that there was also an incident where a pilot had shot at a UFO and, you know, attempted to fire it and get it down, and that this had caused a considerable amount of concern. Were you involved in the early days in the 47? Were you involved peripherally at all in Project Sign or Project Grudge?
At what time?
In since 1947 with the beginning of Project Sign or Project...
I started in 49.
Okay.
I do recall the incident, and it did happen. I think it was outlined pretty well by Ed Ruppel in his book. And I think he gave some specifics about what happened to the pilot.
Okay. Now, at the time, in July of 52, tell us what happened at Washington National Airport.
How did it happen?
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, well, we... had two visitations by UFOs, if you want to call them real. One was, they were both on a Saturday evening. The first occurred, and I only read about it in the press the next day. The following weekend, I got a call from Ray Nathan, who was the PIO at the airport there.
Public information officer?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And he asked me to come down because he said the press was beating his doors down and he didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say, didn't know how far he could go. So he asked me to come down, and I did. And let the press in to visualize, see the radar screen, and see the objects on the screen. And the only time we barred the press was when we had an intercept coming in to see what they could find over the skies of Washington. It was a peculiar thing. At that night, the runways at Bulling Air Force Base were being repaired. And so the Air Defense Squadron that normally inhabited or was stationed at Bulling was sent to Newcastle, Delaware, the nearest air base that they could use. So the 2 weeks in question, the capital had no Air Defense Command planes in the vicinity. They had to come from Newcastle, Delaware.
Which was a considerable...
This was top secret, of course, because...
Right.
For military purposes. They didn't want people to know that Bowling didn't have any Air Defense Squadron for the capital.
Now, a question comes to mind regarding that, and Ed Ruppelt mentions in his book that he was talking to an intelligence official. He wouldn't name the person, but he said that this person had predicted that this would occur. What is behind that? I mean, when you talk about, you know, the fact that the base was, the runway was closed, and there was no air defense within maybe 100 miles of Andrews or the Washington National Airport, is there, I guess the prediction did come true, and it kind of left Ruppelt kind of uneasy. How could you comment on that?
Well, I never discussed it with Ed, and I'm not aware of the situation at all, so I would be in poor position to comment. In fact, I never heard of it until now.
Okay. All right. Now, when this happened on July 19th, the first occurrence was, you said, Saturday night, July the 19th in 52. The first thing that was noticed was on radar. They detected eight objects that were south and east of Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell us what happened that night. I guess this thing went on for several hours, didn't it?
Well, I can only comment on the second Saturday night.
Okay.
When I got down there, I, of course, went into the radar room, and they had about, I'd say, 14 to 15 unknown objects being picked up by radar. We also had some known flights, regular flights that were coming near the airspace of the Capitol. And, of course, these were marked with a little marker that we knew who they were. Of the unknowns, we had a question mark on the marker. We did not know who they were. And we had no contact with them verbally. We just observed them. The returns they gave us were almost exactly like the known flights, the airplanes that we knew were, ours. So we were in contact with some of the known flights, asking them to see if they could see anything in their area. Most of them said no, but one pilot, I forget the airline, I forget his name now, it's been so many years ago, he was coming in from Quantico, and he told us that he had seen this light. It was off his rear ever since he left Quantico, and he was now in the Washington area. And he said he didn't know what it was. He described it as a bright blue light, and said it had been following him.
Now, didn't the radar track them moving at sometimes speeds of up to 7,000 miles an hour?
The speed you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a radar expert, but I do know that the distance that the unknown returns were traveling at a great speed, because with each sweep they would move maybe a half an inch, where a known flight would be relatively in the same spot every time the radar beam made its sweep. So you could see that the known planes were flying at normal speed, and the UFOs were flying, had to be fantastic speed.
And then what happened next when they sent the jets in to chase them, right?
Well, we had an intercept come in from Newcastle, and the first flight reported they could see nothing. But the funny thing was that while we were awaiting their arrival within our airspace, when the minute they appeared on the second they appeared on our radar scope, all the unknowns disappeared completely.
Okay.
Nothing. We had nothing to vector them to. As I said, the minute the jets appeared on our radar scope, the unknown returns disappeared, and we were dumbfounded. We were planning to vector them around and do a little investigating, see if they saw anything. But since we had no traffic to direct them to, they, after about 20 minutes, they decided they'd go back to base. We had nothing further for them to do. And the minute they left our scope on their way back to Delaware, all the unknowns returned. It was as though someone had wiped the radar screen with a rag and then let the objects came back.
Sort of a cat and mouse kind of game then.
Yes. So we duly reported this to the command post in the Pentagon, and they said they would try to send up another intercept later on. So we watched the scope and watched the unknowns for approximately another 2 hours, and finally they informed us that they were sending up two more jets. These were F-94s.
Those are fast ones, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And this time when they appeared on our radar scope, we had them in our area, that the unknown stayed on the scope. And so the flight controllers tried to vector them around to various groups where we had two or three of the unknowns, and we divided the area they were searching to the northern half of the city and the southern half. And one in the north reported he could see nothing. He never did see anything. The one going to the south reported that he did see some bright lights, and when we asked him to describe them, he said they were very brilliant blue-white lights. So he was on a heading toward them, toward a little group of them, and all of a sudden it just seemed like they were closing in on him. On the radar scope, He was in the middle of maybe five or six of them. And he so reported that. He said, they're closing in on me. all he described them was as brilliant blue-white lights.
But he could never see any shape or anything.
Pardon?
He could never see any shape or anything.
No.
No.
But he reported only the light.
Okay.
Then he reported that they were moving off, and we could see them as though they had come in for a close look and then moved back off. And subsequently, he said that he didn't see them anymore. And he said he was going to return to base, which is fine with us. And he did return to base. The UFO stayed on the scope until approximately 5 o'clock in the morning. When it became daylight, they just gradually disappeared. And I called this pilot at his base in Newcastle about 6 o'clock in the morning, got him out of bed, and I asked him a little more specifically, repeated the ground conversation that we had with him and his response, and told him I was going to write a report on the air ground conversation with him and turn it in as a report to the command post, which I did. But I asked him how he felt up there, and he said, well, you know, he said, I don't remember all the things that you've said that you put in the report, but he said, I won't deny I said these things. He said, because when you're up there in the pitch dark flying at 600 miles an hour and you get in contact like I did with the unknowns, he said, you're liable to say anything.
Sure. Well, now, at the time all this was going on, I understand that there was a presidential campaign nomination thing going on. These things, did they actually fly over the state or the nation's capital? Did they actually, were there other witnesses on the ground beside military people and the people in the radar room? Were there civilians that saw this?
We had some people. We had reports of visual sightings of lights in the sky from various sources. But, of course, that doesn't mean much. Visual sighting from the ground, from people who are not trained to understand what they're looking at in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
We did have some visual reports. As a matter of fact, I think some of the airport personnel did report that they saw lights in the sky. But on my way down to the radar room, I did look visually at the sky. It was dark. I saw nothing.
You saw nothing?
I didn't see any lights.
Now, what happened immediately after this? I mean, take us behind the doors at the Pentagon and tell us what was going on with the with General Samford. And your officer above you was Dewey Fournet, correct?
Yes, Dewey Fournet was the Air Force intelligence officer assigned to current intelligence, which covers, anything unknown in our airspace or at sea, or in our waters at sea.
Okay, what was going on behind the doors?
Well, of course, we had no answers. We just had the reports, and there was a lot of press queries, and the press just flooded the place. When they tie up all the lines into the Pentagon, people being frightened, and also a lot of officials trying to find out what's happening, and they all call the Pentagon, then your normal work doesn't get done, because the Pentagon is the brain center of the
whole nation
of our military all over the world.
Right.
And so you've got movements of ships and personnel and transport of materials and things that you can't do them when your lines are tied up. And so that constitutes what I called, or what people were calling, public hysteria.
And that's exactly what was going on at the time.
Pardon?
That was what was going on at the time. It was ramping up to that, correct?
I don't understand you.
Well, when you say public hysteria, that is exactly what the mood was following that, when the press started flooding the Pentagon with phone calls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in light of that, we've all heard basically and the point that you just brought up regarding, tying up the telephone lines and logging the communications channels with, calls like this.
That's a form of panic.
Right. This kind of preceded what actually took place with the Robertson panel that was held shortly after that, when they determined that this was a problem, that this was going to be a problem. Do you feel, basically, Al, I'm curious what your personal interpretation is. Do you believe that UFOs are interplanetary spaceships yourself? Were you among some of those inside the intelligence community that figured that they might be?
Well, at the time, as 40-some years ago, I thought the answers to the UFO question was close to being solved. At that time, I did think that the possibility that these were interplanetary spaceships was the most apt answer.
Okay.
But now, 40 years later...
You don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And because nothing's happened to prove it one way or the other, I do still feel that there is a great possibility that these are interplanetary spaceships.
As the Pentagon spokesperson for the military UFO project Blue Book, and Al, back to this question I wanted to ask you, I guess the big question is, was anything covered up?
No, the Air Force has really never covered up the project. They just are not in the business of releasing information or making work for themselves on this subject. They're not funded to do that. If a member of the press or any individual knows or wants to know the details of a particular sighting and the Air Force had investigated it, the Air Force would release this information.
But the question is that do they just, I guess the next question would be, is there an agency that is doing this type of research aside from the Air Force, or did they just say, we know they're there, they're not causing us any problems, so we're just going to ignore them?
Well, there is no other agency that I know of. I know that other branches of the government get UFO queries, which they refer to the Pentagon. However, it would be a very thankless task, as you know, there are literally thousands of UFO sightings all over the world, and they wouldn't get anything else done if they just spent all the time on answering UFO queries or releasing information on sightings that are reported to them.
What happened at the Robertson panel? How much involvement did you have with that?
I had very little involvement.
Okay.
So I can't comment on that. I do know that later in, I think it was after I left the desk there, in 1953, they did have a panel gathering of the scientists who had worked and helped Ed Ruppelt analyze some of these sighting reports. And he asked that the panel was supposed to come up with a recommendation to either drop the subject, announce that they were convinced they were interplanetary spacecraft, or just recommend that the subject is serious and it needs further investigation.
What did they take? Which tact did they take?
They recommended that the Air Force continue to investigate.
Okay. Was that how much involvement did Battelle have with that, with the group?
How much involvement did what?
Did Battelle Memorial Institute, how much involvement did Battelle have with Project Blue Book?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. In your career, in the involvement with this particular aspect of this situation, what would you rate as probably the most solid case that would support your feelings that it might be interplanetary?
Well, there was one case that happened just outside of Washington in farm country, and I went out there with Dewey Furnay to talk to the people who were reporting what they saw. It seems that the mother and father and son were out shopping for the week. They lived on a farm. They went to the market once a week. And this was a Saturday night. And they went to the market. And when they came home, they got in the house, and the farm wife, the man's wife, asked her husband to go down and investigate what was happening down in this, where they kept the chickens, because the chickens were all upset. And she said she feared that there would be maybe a snake was down there.
Uh-huh.
So the husband went down there, and as he left the house through the back door, he saw an object that looked like a moon, and five little moons circling the big object. And also he saw the moon in another part of the sky. So he knew these were not natural objects.
Right.
And he called a police station. Fairfax, this was in Fairfax County. He called the Fairfax County police. And they sent, I think there were three or four officers out. And they joined the people. They saw this object. They watched it for hours. The couple's oldest daughter came home with it. She had been on a date, and her date was with her. And they all stood outside watching this object. And they didn't know what it was. But they saw these five little objects merge with the big objects. The big object, the ones that were circling the big object, they merged, and the big object took off and disappeared. And this was witnessed by four Fairfax County police officials.
So it gave the report a lot of credibility.
Pardon?
Gave the report a lot of credibility.
Oh, yes. And there were, you know, like maybe 10 people watching this object.
Al, I got another question before we go to our next break. But we hear a lot today about UFO alien abductions, the alleged abductions of human beings by aliens. Was any of that stuff going on back in your day?
No, and it's not going on in these days either. I don't believe in it. I think it's just people who want a little notoriety and trying to create a sensation. The Air Force, to my knowledge, has no evidence, no pieces of material or nothing that you can.
So you think that Roswell might not even be a real event? The Roswell crash, 1947?
That was before my time, but I don't know about that. I can't answer that. I wasn't there at the time, and I don't know the details.
Okay. Once again, I want to thank my guest tonight, Al Chop, for appearing on the program. Very interesting case that we talked about tonight, the Washington overflight in 1952. Earlier in the hour, I want to kind of reflect back on something real quick just to get you up to speed on what I was asking him about, because he said he didn't know anything about it. But Ruppelt, Edward Ruppelt, who was the captain of Project Blue Book in the early days, well, from the inception of it, till 1955 or 56, I believe, Ruppelt mentions that there was something that really caused him some curiosity. I'm just going to read this little paragraph out of his book here. It's on page number 209. He says, in some aspects, the Washington National sightings could be classed as a surprise. We use this as an excuse when things got fouled up. But in other ways, they weren't. A few days prior to the incident, a scientist from an agency that I can't name, and I were, him and this guy were talking about the buildup of reports along the east coast of the United States. We talked for about 2 hours, and I was ready to leave when he said that he had one last comment to make, a prediction. From his study of the UFO reports that he was getting from Air Force headquarters and from discussions with his colleagues, he said that he thought that we were sitting right on top of a big keg full of loaded flying saucers. Within the next few days, he told me, and I remember that he punctuated his slow, deliberate remarks by hitting the desk with his fist, "They're going to blow up, and you're going to have the granddaddy of all UFO sightings. The sighting will occur in Washington or New York," he predicted, "probably Washington." And Ruppelt goes on to say that the trend in the UFO reports that this scientist based his prediction on hadn't gone unnoticed. He reports that we, on Project Blue Book, had seen it, and so had the people in the Pentagon. We all had talked about it. And that kind of makes you wonder exactly what the heck the guy that Ruppelt talks about from the agency that he cannot name. And one other thing, too, about that, the agency. He does mention the CIA in the book. So we know that the unnamed agency was not the CIA. Some people have speculated that it might be the NSA, but it could be, and I think there's a good possibility that there was another agency that was investigating UFO reports. As you've heard, my guest tonight was a little bit ambiguous on some of that. But nevertheless, it was very interesting to bring that up. Okay, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.